Again, I think you have to manage them regardless of Sunday or beyond. You know, I like the fact that we've got it done when we did as it relates to, every year the trade deadline is X, and this year we were able to get it done weeks before, which is good. And I know that every year presents different challenges with things like that. You know, again, we'll see how we go this week, and we'll see how we go. And again, it's never about one person or one player. It's about the team, and I thought we were in a good rhythm the other night on offense and continuing with that rhythm.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Good morning. Happy Thursday, Jeremy and Joe. Cold one out there.
Frost on the windshields, potentially.
Frost, yeah. I had frost. 37 right now. Mm-hmm. High of 57 today, and then, in the 60s for days, even in the 70s next week. So that's nice. Sabres lost. If you want to grumble about it with us, we grumbled a lot in the first segment.
Yes, we did.
Although,
it's what we do.
Sometimes. I would say mine was not full grumble. And I don't think it was rose-colored glasses. It was just, how do I say it in the shortest version? I think they show signs of a team that will have strong stretches. Last year's team is hard to imagine. Mm-hmm. They're going to go 6-2 in a stretch. They didn't win back-to-back games ever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a team I think will have stretches. They've got the goalie. They can get a hot goalie. They have two that can get hot. They're pretty good at 5-on-5. And if they can just figure anything out on the power play.
And breakaways.
And, sure.
I think they're 0 for 5 on breakaways.
Yes.
They should get Al Kotalik in there to fix them and someone else on the power play.
So it's disappointing. I'm going to wait till the end of the road trip to be upset because I wanted 5 out of 6 points and they got 1, which matters. And, we'll see.
Crosby and Malkin, by the way. Do you want to guess where they rank all time in points against the Buffalo Sabres?
1 and 2.
They're not 1 and 2.
Tied for 1. 1 and 1A.
7th and 15th.
Okay. Crosby 7th.
I don't know that you would ever get number 1. I wouldn't have got number 1.
Number 1 is like Daniel Alfredson.
No, he's that's a good guess though. He's 6th. He's above Crosby.
Number 1 all time against the Sabres, is it modern era?
Ish.
Like is it
Yeah, it's modern era. I mean,
it's my
it
era.
It was in color.
It was in color.
I don't know that he played in HD though.
Okay.
It was definitely in color, and I don't know if it was in HD. He might have been really close. When did HD start?
Which
2006, actually, I think they had HD because they would have the Sabres games in HD, but then when they would go to the different camera angles, like behind the net, then it would not be in HD, and there would be the little cup graphics on the left and right.
Team?
He retired in 2004.
Okay, team?
Hartford, Pittsburgh, Carolina, Toronto.
Ron Francis?
Ron Francis is number 1 all time against the Sabres. Would have never guessed that.
He scored 1 million points.
Yeah. 114 points against the Sabres.
How many goals?
36.
There you go.
Yeah.
Assist merchant.
Yep. He always was.
You want the most goals all time is Jágr and then Alfredsson.
Alfredsson too. Okay.
Yeah, Alfredsson killed them. Jeez.
803-0550. Okay, so in that clip, we'll get a Sabres call in or two and Bills calls as well. McDermott says it's not, it's not just about one guy. For me right now, it is. I am changing my expectations for the Bills because of the Cooper trade. And it doesn't mean I think they're definitely going to win the Super Bowl and this is amazing and perfect, but I thought they had such a fatal flaw that I was having trouble buying into what they were going to be. And that goes back to training camp. They started off 3-0, and okay, maybe this is something. But then the Baltimore game and the Houston game and Shakir being limited and you've got nothing else, to me, it looked like as defenses were going to adjust, they had a problem so big that I couldn't buy in. Like, okay, they're going to be good. We're going to see what happens this year. You never know. Now with Cooper, I am changing that.
It felt like them going through the entire playoffs with the receiving core they had would have been nearly impossible. It would have been tough. It would have been so tough.
Not only that, it would have been malpractice to do it. You have a team this good, you can't go in with a hole that big.
Right.
And
in a position that important.
Right. Imagine a hockey team. It looks pretty good, but they've just got no goaltending, and you'd say you can't go into the playoffs like that. You could pray that things get better. So the Cooper trade, it's just one guy, but it does change how I look at them this season. I now think they have a higher ceiling. I didn't think they could win the Super Bowl with the group of receivers that they had. Flat out, didn't think they could do it. And now I think it's more likely. I think it's possible you don't want to say impossible with Josh Allen because, he could get hot and go crazy, but they were just so limited on the outside unless Keon Coleman grew really fast and became a force, I didn't think it was going to happen. And with Cooper, I think the possibility exists in a way that it did not before. So it is about one guy for me.
And I do think it's kind of the end of the managed expectations for the Bills. I don't want to say it's the end of the transition year idea, because they did transition, right? Like, there are so many players that went out the door. Even if they had gotten better, you would still have to say, well, they did transition, because there were so many different people and so many top players that left in the offseason. But in terms of what their expectation is right now versus what it's been, it's right back to where it's been. Like, training camp was a lot of, hey, just get in and see what happens and cross your fingers. And now they have a good record, 4-2. They have a couple of bad losses, but they're 4-2. They have a 2-game lead in the division, or I should say a game and a half, because Miami's played one fewer game. So they have a game and a half lead in the division through 6 weeks. And the one roster spot that everyone was most worried about has now been sufficiently corrected, or should be sufficiently corrected. What's left to really be super? If Cooper works out, what's left to be really concerned about? That'd be my way of thinking about it. On the roster, the schedule's tough. I'm not worried about the division. So, like, outside forces, I'm not as worried as I was. And then internal forces on the roster, like, what is the thing I'm supposed to be worried about right now?
Two answers: safeties and run defense.
Okay,
but that's
those are my biggest worries. Though generally, I think I'm doing pretty well.
Well, you and I are likely aligned. We want the strength of the team to be the offense, and you want to have a top five offense.
Yeah.
You generally don't win without one of those, at least not win big. I mean, the Chiefs did, but probably shouldn't have.
Uh-huh.
So, safeties, defensive line, maybe. And there's Bean yesterday talking about how he might not be done, which is a good thing to hear. And this is, you know, if something else comes up, we need something else. I think
the Cooper trade allows them to do another deal if they want to spend the picks, because financially it doesn't really do anything. It's $800,000.
So Twitter poll is, if you were to guess going forward today, I didn't know when to start this. You know, it could start it in a week or two if you think it's going to take Cooper to get some ramp-up time. Who's going to lead this team in receptions? Who's going to lead them in catches from this day forward? You've got three options: Cooper, Kincaid, or Shakir. Who would you vote for? I would bet Cooper.
I would. It's not Shakir for me. It's between him and Kincaid. I don't know that Shakir's healthy right now.
That's going to be a limiting factor.
A little bit. And I don't know. Snap count was down against the Jets, and I wonder how long it might take him to look like he's healthy again. And Kincaid's one of these guys where you just look up and like, oh, he had 6 catches in the game. It doesn't even really feel like it. He's more of a possession player to me. So, I don't know. I think Cooper's going to help him, too. That's the other part of this. So, I might slightly give the edge for me to Kincaid. But it would be hard not to pick. It's hard not to pick Cooper.
Cooper's
going to lead them in receiving yards. I'm very sure of that.
That's probably right. He was averaging 9 targets a game in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson. And I don't think he'll stay at 9. But it doesn't take a big number of targets to be number one on this team. What if he gets 7 a game? Like, before Shakir got hurt, right? The first 3 games of the season, he had 3, 5, and 6. Now, I guess you could point out the Bills only played half a game in 2 of those. They didn't really need to play the second half against Jacksonville. They didn't need to play the second half against Miami.
Yeah.
So, Shakir, what's he top out at for targets per game? 7?
Mm-hmm. And tops out at that.
And Cooper, for most of his career, he's just going to earn targets. I don't know how long it'll take him to get ramped up, a week, 2, a month all the way, whatever. But some of the highlights yesterday that showed the facility showed that Cooper has just a way about him, a pro's pro. And they pulled up a highlight of the Bills against man coverage against the Texans and not many guys getting open and really sticky coverage. And then they showed a clip of Cooper. It wasn't exactly being pressed, but his man coverage on the outside. And here's Emmanuel Acho breaking it down. Like, the defensive back's job, he's shaded to the inside leverage. Don't let Amari Cooper get inside here on a slant. That's the whole job. I'm lined up there. I'm going to stop him from doing that. And they snap the ball, and Cooper takes a couple steps, but he slow plays it. Like, he plays at a different tempo.
Yeah.
It's not a full speed route. It's change of speed matters a lot. and he slow plays a couple steps, puts a foot in the ground, and he smokes that dude to the inside. The whole time. The whole play was, don't get beat to the inside, and he absolutely just murdered him. Going to the inside, caught a touchdown pass. That's this year from Deshaun Watson. So, like, I feel like I'm going to see the best corner following him, or the best matchups.
Yeah.
They're gonna make a point to try and stop him, and I don't think he's Jefferson, Chase, Prime Diggs, anything like that. But if he's going to be a pro's pro outside receiver, I'm also going to lean into the Josh Allen part of this, Joe, which is Josh Allen likes to throw the ball a little bit deeper, a little down the field.
Yep.
I think once the chemistry is there, he's going to look to Cooper a lot. He threw the ball to Mac Hollins 6 times in a game.
Yeah.
And Cooper's going to have a 10-target game this season.
For sure he is. He might have multiple. That's where I could be talked into Cooper actually is the right answer here. Because if he is as good as he's been, like if he's last year's version of Cooper, and maybe even to an extent this year's version, he's going to earn Allen's targets. He's going to get them. Because he's going to be playing the same role. He's going to be running the same routes as Diggs was, right? And who got the ball by far the most in this offense with Josh Allen? It was the Diggs spot. It was running all the routes. It was running the intermediate stretches of the field. It was once in a while being somebody who's going to take a shot down the field to. So if Cooper is going to be... I saw a route against Dallas earlier in the year that was someone point out on Twitter, like, this is the vertical element that he has that nobody else in the Bills does, where he sells the corner, maybe on the same thing, like, he sells the corner on, I'm going to run the slant, and then he puts his left foot in the ground, and he shoots past him, and he's open by 20 yards, and this is one of his drops of the year, which, that's probably going to happen with him, too. There's probably going to be a couple plays this year where Bills fans are going to lose their minds because Amari Cooper is going to be wide open and drop a football. That's kind of the deal with him a little bit. But what was that play? That play was he cooked a corner, and he's open 30 yards down the field. Josh Allen is going to see that.
He's going to look for it.
He's going to look for it. He's going to hunt for it, and that pass is going to get thrown to him. So, yeah, like, why? I guess if it goes well, if he's good, why should I not expect that he's going to be at the exact same target share that he's been everywhere else? There's not like there's so many other guys that would rob him of targets in the Bills offense. It's not the same as the Jets, right? Like the Jets add Davante Adams, and it's, well, how's this going to go? Because Garrett Wilson's already there, and Rodgers loves Alan Lazard. He throws the ball to him all the time. So who gets what? Is Wilson now the number two? Is Adams the number one? Who is he going to look to? Good problems to have. Those are all good receivers. Here, I just don't know who gets in Cooper's way if Cooper is good. Cooper's really good. Who is really getting in his way?
Yeah.
There's nobody else that is a Garrett Wilson level of player, and there's also nobody else that runs the type of routes that Cooper does on this team.
At the risk of doing the thing we always do, which is look back to past results, maybe nostalgia, maybe as a model, when Beasley caught 100 balls, there was somebody on the outside catching 100 balls, like somebody else out there. So Shakir getting more space in there, and the other guy on the outside, Allen, is going to look there quite a bit.
Have a text. I mean, he's been trusting in Mac Hollins.
Right.
Right. And isn't Cooper just going to be Mac Hollins now? Sorry, like he'll be better than that, but he's going to be running in the same spots. Allen looks like he trusts Hollins more than anybody else in the field sometimes.
I like what you said, though, when you asked, like, is this the end of the year in transition?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I think it pretty much is.
Even though we know it is. Like, we can kind of put it to the side and stop talking about it being a year in transition if they lose a game in November.
As an excuse for, like, oh, guys, it's okay if they don't blank, whatever.
Yeah, we might kind of get to, they're not a perfect team, they've got some youth, next year they're going to add a lot, they've got dead cap space, so they got a couple things working against them. But I will now treat it less like a year in transition and more like a whatever. We don't have to put huge titles on it, sometimes we do. I just have high expectations for them now. Does the Cooper trade change your expectation for the Bills? For me, it does. For me, it lifts a ceiling that I thought they had. I don't know how high it goes. We'll see how well the fit works and how Joe Brady can incorporate him. But the ceiling is lifted a bit. And that's good. That to do that in week 6 is a great move. Mm-hmm. I think it's a calculated move. It's noticing that we're good, but we're not good enough. That's what that trade says, is we're not good enough. The other question, of course, on the Bills is what happens at kicker? They tried out a couple. Mm-hmm. And Brandon Bean on the kicker yesterday, man, it is – I feel bad for Tyler Bass because for the GM to openly talk about, like, listen, if we have to make a change, we're going to do it. That is, that is as sharply pointed as Bean gets publicly on a player.
Yeah.
And McDermott, too.
Yes.
McDermott the other day saying he knows he has to be better. That's not typically how McDermott phrases things, right?
Right. They've gone from a lot of faith in him, a lot of faith in him, he's going to be all right, a lot of faith in him, too. No, he has to get it right. He knows he has to get it right. Imagine how those conversations are behind the wall, inside those walls. I mean, it's Bass has to feel like he's fighting for a job, and he'll get another one if he were to be replaced. But the Bills are trying out kickers.
That's where they're in such an awkward spot, though, because like, are they gonna cut him? They're gonna eat the cap penalty.
I don't know.
Are they gonna roster him while they bring in another kicker?
I don't know how it would work, but
it's gonna be weird.
I know that I'm now at the point where the Packers cut their kicker, and I'm immediately checking like what are his stats?
Naverson, I think.
Brandon McManus is who got cut loose.
Brandon McManus, okay.
Yeah, he got cut loose. While.
Yeah. He
went from the Jags to the Packers. He was under investigation for like what? Inappropriate conduct on the flood, whatever.
Yeah, there's something like that.
So I don't know if that's the kind of player the Bills want, but a guy gets cut loose and I want to see what's up.
Yeah. I don't like being
spot. No, you're right. They're releasing Braden Narveson.
They're
signing Narveson. Brandon McManus.
Okay. I don't like being in a spot where Bean yesterday in the Pat McAfee show says a comment basically along the lines of like, we don't have to be done, like going into the trade deadline. And my first thought is about a kicker.
Kicker.
Because that's where my mind is. Like, what else would that not be number one on the list right now? Is that not the most, I asked actually, you know, what is to be worried about on this Bills team right now? For how many people would they, right now, number one be who their kicker is? Would most Bills fans say right now that their biggest worry is that there's going to be a playoff game or an important game down the stretch of the season that comes down to Tyler Bass's foot? Who would have confidence in that right now? And it's the same problem. Is kicker more like golf than any other position? Because he has a fade. Even a slice. And I don't know how normal this is, but it's been about a year or maybe even a year and a half of this being a thing about how his kicks kind of leak to the right. How many kickers prefer to have it on the left hash mark? Like maybe it is some. I don't know. I don't track this. But Bass for like a year now has been, when I get my extra point, I want it on the left hash mark. He's playing his fade. It really is like golf for that. And I feel like he can't fix it. He can't figure out how to fix it. Because a lot of his misses are like that. Not all of them. He shanked the extra point.
There have been the occasional shank.
There's been some shanks. That's the one that was early in the season too, right?
Yeah.
But everything
and
is
the
like,
one in New York, he looked like a shank that was blocked.
Yeah. But he looks like a kicker that is scared he's going to slice every kick. And I don't know how you overcome that. I also don't know who helps him with that. There's not really kicker coaches, right? You don't have a swing coach as a kicker. I think it's just up to you to figure it out, I think.
Special teams coach.
Would he be a kicking expert? I'm like, hey, your foot's too open on the maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. 803-0550, you'll get a call in here from John and Marilla. Hey, John, good morning.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Started to change gears on you real quick. Kudo to Beans with the trades he's making. Keep up the good work. However, on the other end of the spectrum, Kevin Adams.
Mm-hmm.
When are the Sabres going to let him go? And this Halloween could be the earliest that we are out of the playoff race yet. And the reason I say that is because watching that game last night, it just solidified the fact. Yeah, we beat Florida without their two best players. That was a good win. I'll give them that. However, Kevin Adams has misidentified talent so badly, and is so evident that I don't think that there's any chance that he's going to be able to rectify this. Because, you know, Dylan Cousins is a great third line center. He's great. He'll thrive on the third line. He can't compete on the second and first lines against people. It's evident, and it pisses me off because it all dates back to when he had to fight Philly's toughest guy, and we had nobody to stick up for him. And ever since that fight, he has not been the same player. And then, you know, we do not have any first-line players on our team. The trade for Eichel, we got Tuck, who was a third-line winger for Vegas, and we got Krebs, who was the crux of the deal, who Vegas had going into their top two lines. And we completely flip-flop it. We come in, and we're going to put a square peg in a round hole and say, okay, Tuck, you're our first-line winger. That's great and dandy. It doesn't work like that. You know, and then we underdevelop Krebs, and we put him with two guys who can't even play hockey and say, oh, you know, he's not developing the way we want him to. Well, of course he's not going to. Okay? I mean, and then, you know, Dahlin getting in a fight in practice. He's the captain. Yeah, I like it. That's fine and dandy. He's playing terrible. He's either hurt or something else is going on, because our defense is not good. Okay, we've changed everything. We've changed coaches. It's Kevin Adams, in my opinion, has until Thanksgiving to have the Sabres in a playoff spot by Thanksgiving, a top eight. And if it's not there, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. It's ridiculous how misidentified the talent is on this team. We can't compete with good teams. And last night was a gross example of it. And I don't blame any of it on Lindy, because, you know, right now, if we want to skate with teams, that's great. We're not going to be able to do it, because we don't have a first line to compete with other teams' first lines.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. The first line to me is not the issue. I like their first line a lot when it's been together. They've only been together for two games this year.
Yep.
I almost feel like they need to spread the wealth, because they need to get, like, Cousins going.
Like, get the kid line back together?
Sure. Just switch them. Switch Thompson and Cousins.
Sure, but then that's where you get to who takes the Skinner spot, because you didn't replace that guy. I mean, you don't want that to be Zucker.
No, I mean, it has to be Benson. And he's going to do fine defensively. He's going to do a lot of smart plays, but he's not going to score 30 goals.
Well, I'm not...
On a couple things there. One, on Cousins. The idea that he is some defensive stalwart, like, oh, it's okay if he's not scoring because he's good defensively, like, oh, he's a good third-line center, that is not represented in the numbers at all. And if you've watched him for the last couple of years, he is not a great defender. Last year, evolving hockey, his goals above replacement, like where he ranks in the league by percentile, defensively, he was in the 19th percentile last season. Year before that, he was in the second percentile. He's been a bad defensive center for 2 years now.
Yeah.
So that part of his game is also not just like there as a baseline. And on Adams, I don't know. I kind of want to say I don't expect them to move on him. But at the same time, I also want to remember that I did not think they were going to move on Granato, and they did.
But a mid-season GM?
Not mid-season. I don't think mid-season.
And who's the next GM? Carmanos?
They did do that with Darcy, right? They were fired Darcy Chance, and then they fired him like during the year. They hired LaFontaine.
It's a long time ago, but yeah.
It's like 10 years ago. They're not firing him mid-season.
Thanks, John. 803-0550. The thing I was going to say is, like, I don't know. I just won't say it. It was about Eichel. I just won't say it.
Darcy Ribeiro was fired November 13th, 2013.
Okay. There you go. 803-0550. Sal at 8 on Amari Cooper and what we learned yesterday as the Bills introduce him. Number 18. Let's go. Get him in the lineup.
Should I start him in guillotine this week? I am desperate.
That's a great question.
Lost Rashid Shaheed. I got a Nico Collins injury on my bench. Dontavian Wicks is hurt.
Tonight's game, Thursday Night Football, is like, it's got a preseason vibe. Saints Broncos, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler.
Yeah.
All of the Saints receivers are hurt. And by the way, Patrick Surtain is ruled out for this game. Broncos corner, like one of the best corners in the league.
Yeah.
So it really might be Bub Means season.
Bub Means, because Olave and Shaheed are out.
Both out.
Taysom Hill, I think, is out. He's not a receiver, but.
Bub Means. Get ready.
Was Rattler good last week?
They scored a lot of points in one quarter.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, they ended up losing 51-27.
Yes.
Holy cow.
803-0550. Baker had a big day in that game. Broncos and Saints, Thursday Night Football. Catch the fever. Sabres and Blue Jackets. Pick your poison. Jeremy and Joe, we'll talk with Sal at 8. We'll talk with Nathan Zagura, who is a Browns radio analyst, coming up at 8:30 to get the Browns side of the story on Amari Cooper. And keep rolling here as we take you through this very chilly Thursday morning on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Zucker plays it back to the point. Byram feeds a short pass from McLeod, top of the near circle. Shot scores! Welcome to Buffalo, Ryan McLeod. He's given the Sabres a 5-4 lead with 9:04 to go here in the third period. The Sabres have come roaring back in Pittsburgh.
Mr. Dan Dunleavy on the call of one of the first moments of the game. From the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. Sabres lose. They get a point, but they lose. They were down 4-3, Joe, and I decided, going upstairs, forget this. Got in bed, checked the score, 5-4. Wow, 20 seconds. I walked up a floor, and that happened. And then I had the emotional battle that many fans, that happens to them, you might have, which is, should I keep watching? You know, you feel personally responsible. I turned it off, and you took the lead.
Yeah.
Should I turn it back off? Or should I watch them try to close out this game?
That happened to my buddy 3 times last night. Every time he turned the game on, the Penguins scored.
Yeah, you know, I watched it, and I'm sorry. It's my fault. I mean, if you want to take a couple calls that are mad about Dylan Cousins, you could do that. My role in this was that I continued to watch it. It's that's why. Also, My moral victories for, like, what to do, how the Sabres can achieve a moral victory. The Kings game, it was outshoot the Kings 13-5, and they outshot them 13-4.
Yeah.
This game, it was don't do what you always do in Pittsburgh, which is give up 3 goals in, like, 2 minutes. They didn't do exactly that, but they pretty much did.
It kind of felt like they did.
It sure felt like every single Pittsburgh game that they've ever had.
Yeah, and also I pointed this out to you, though, like during that stretch where the Penguins maybe scored 2 goals in like 5 minutes, the Sabres, we thought, had scored because they messed up the play-by-play call, so there was one point where the score bug read 4-1, and if you turned it off, you could have turned it off in that moment as he's calling goal, 4-1 Sabres, turn the TV off, you come back 10 minutes later, it's 3-3.
Yeah, tough one. 803-0550. If you want to share a thought on that, you can. And if you want to share a thought on... Oh, I'm sorry. My computer is ringing. Or if you want to share a thought on that, you can. Or on Amari Cooper, you can as well. Dan Lanning, head coach of Oregon. The NCAA closed the loophole on the 12-man penalty. If you missed this...
Yeah, he did this on purpose.
Yeah, we'll explain what happened. You know you did something right when they close a loophole immediately.
Like that week.
You exploited something. Dan Lanning, head coach of Oregon against Ohio State, they intentionally subbed the 12th man onto the field to help them get a stop, which they did, and Ohio State was down to not much. Like they basically got a free 12-man on the field penalty because they just wanted to trade that in for time.
Yeah.
And he was asked about it. You know, a lot of people are giving you credit for being a genius. Did you do that on purpose? And he basically said yes.
Uh-huh.
He said, we practice a lot of scenarios. We practice a lot of things, very specific situations, and that, you know, quote, we spend an inordinate amount of time on situations, and some situations don't come up very often in college football, but this was obviously something we had worked on. you can see the result. Intentionally putting a 12th man on the field.
Should he not have admitted that because now he can't do it again? Would they not have closed it if he had said, no, we didn't do that on purpose?
That's a good point. That's a good question. But it could have been done to him, too.
Yeah, that's
right. He just needs it in that moment to finish out a game. So he gave up 5 yards and traded 4 seconds. And from now on, if you do that, the time goes back on the clock.
If you do it on purpose or just any time you have 12 men in the field? Maybe they have to deem you do it on purpose?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter?
12 men on the field will mean 5-yard penalty, game clock resets to where it was.
Yeah.
Because it's still a penalty against you.
Right.
In the case, what Lanning was, he did get penalized 5 yards, but his math or their math at Oregon was, we'll trade you 5 yards for 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And they did that, and now it's just 5 yards, and you don't get to eat those 4 seconds. So they changed the rule.
Could you do this in the NFL, though, right now?
Yes, there's a term for it. Oh, someone call in and help us out. Was it Buddy Ryan? Was it somebody did it
in the NFL?
Yeah, somebody put a 12th man on the field on purpose on like a 3rd and goal. Is there a? Oh, come on.
I'm not. It's going to be like in the 90s or earlier than that. Because I don't remember anybody
say it's
doing
called.
It on I remember Jim Harbaugh sending out all those players to tackle the other players on purpose. But I don't remember 12 men on the field.
Somebody texted in. Somebody tweeted in. There's even a term for it. Oh, I'm so mad I can't remember this.
I don't know. Because like I'm gonna be thinking about that. If it's possible right now and they don't have the loophole closed in the NFL, if you are... I mean, you could even do that at the end of a half, couldn't you? Like the Bills in the helmet, 8 seconds to go against the Jets at the end of the first half. Why not put a 12th man on the field? Because what? They're going to get, they're going to run
five seconds.
They're going to get 5 yards. They're going to go from their own 48 to the opposing 47, right? Like, and they're still not in field goal range.
The play before the Hail Mary.
The play before
put 14 guys on the field.
Right. Put 20 up there.
Put your entire defensive line 20 yards down the field. If you want to put Rousseau and Epinesa there, just go ahead and put Dwayne Smoot and Casey Tuhill there while you're at it. Put 14 guys on the field.
If this is open in the NFL right now, somebody's going to do it in the NFL unless they make a rule beforehand.
I know somebody has done it.
Okay.
And I can't remember who it was. Anyway, 803-0550, if anybody thinks of it. I'm so mad I can't remember the term.
Do you think it was Buddy Ryan that did it?
I don't remember. Intentional 12th man. It was like a goal line play. Yeah, like you would do it on...
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Anyway, Sabres play tonight. Columbus.
In Columbus, who had a very emotional night the other night with the Goudreau family in attendance against the Panthers, I believe they were playing. So... This is a bad team they're playing, though. Like, this is a bad team. They're going to be favored in this game. They are favored in this game. It's going to be a backup goaltender, too. So it's 2 road games against bad teams, and the Sabres are home for a 4-game homestand.
Okay.
6 games. Just, come on. Don't let the season get away from you. Let it be interesting can we get to November? Please, with the season being a little bit interesting and not feel like it's already over. Because they've lost to bad teams in past years. Like, there have been bad losses. They lost to Columbus. That was the 9-4 game, right? Where they chanted Fire Granato. It started everything with the players
and
the fans.
And then the next game, they scored 9 themselves.
Against Toronto.
Yeah, but that was, like, one of the worst goaltended games in the history of the NHL.
But at home, against a horrible Blue Jackets team, they gave up 9 goals. So it's not automatic they're going to win this game tonight, but they got to win this game tonight. And then on Saturday.
They have to win this game tonight.
I feel like they have to win both games. You got 2 bad teams, you've got to win both
games. They have
to
win tonight.
Levi tonight for sure.
Yes.
Which I'm excited about because I think he's right now looking like the better goaltender. It's early. It's only a couple games. Like Lukanen on that goal last night, maybe it's a little harsh, but he's square to the shooter. I know it's Evgeny Malkin in the faceoff circle, but he's square to the shooter. I need him for $5 million a year to not let that puck trickle through him. And be a tap in behind him.
Yep. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Bills and Titans coming up on Sunday, 1:00, as the primetime schedule goes away for quite some time. A lot of primetime games now. just, you know, Sundays at 1, Sundays at 4, get into a nice routine. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Hey, let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills and are now WGR550.com. Chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Contest ends on January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence. Powering tomorrow, comforting today.
Stay warm today. It's going to warm up a little bit, but in the 30s to start your morning. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. Andy on a cell phone has the answer to the penalty. The 12-man thing where teams do it on purpose. Hey, Andy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's not the 12-man thing. I'm not sure what you're thinking about. But a few years ago, Mike Vrabel did something. I think it was to Bill Belichick where he was inside or outside 4 minutes. He took like 3 or 4 delay of game penalties in a row. And that took off like another 2 minutes off the clock. And then I think another team did it the following week, and the NFL changed their rule right after that.
Yeah. Okay, I've got the story here. Vrabel.
He did do this.
Titans trailing 30-29, Houston the ball in the second one. What did he do?
So exactly? they had a punt. It was like a fourth down, I remember this. And there were maybe 5-6 minutes left on the clock, and the clock is running. So he takes a delay of or a false start penalty on purpose. He tells this guy to take a false start penalty.
Clock keeps going.
The play clock resets, but the clock keeps running. So he kills like 2.5 minutes of clock without running a play. And Belichick, meanwhile, is losing his mind on the other sideline. But the thing I remember about that story is Belichick did it like 3 weeks earlier to the Jets. So Belichick was mad that he was having it done to him after he did it a month earlier.
Yeah.
But I think they closed that one.
The answer to the one, the Dan Lanning Oregon one, is I was close to getting the name. There's Buddy Ryan called it the Polish goal line. And he also apparently had a Polish punt. And here's the situation for Buddy Ryan's Polish goal line. The opponent is inside the 5 going into score. Less than 15 seconds left. We want to stop the offense from scoring. In the process, we want to run the clock down to where they have one play. So we sub in, basically, extra players. And we get penalized half the distance, leave them with enough time to run one play, then we go back and make that stop. And there's another story here from, who is this? Having just watched a coach, some guy named Lynn, I just have the clip here. The Eagles had a Polish punt formation. In a most unusual formation designed to prevent a blocked kick or long run back, Buddy Ryan sent 14 men on the field for a last-minute punt.
Love it.
14.
I love it.
At the worst, the expected penalty for too many men would set the Eagles back 5 yards, but drain precious seconds from the clock. The Eagles actually did not get flagged. They missed it. They missed 14 men on the field when this happened, by the way. Anyway, so that's the story. It's happened a couple times, and they closed these loopholes. Dan Lanning did it for Oregon.
The other one they closed was when the Ravens had like 10 seconds to kill on a punt at the end of a game, and they just had their players all tackle the Bengals players. So there were 10 holding penalties on the field, but they were technically on offense, and the rule is it can't end at a defensive penalty. So the game ended. But I think they closed that one too. I love this. I love when coaches find loopholes.
Absolutely.
Come on, McDermott. Somebody do this. With the 12 men, the thing that Lanning did at Oregon.
We'll talk with Sal Capaccio coming up in a few minutes. He's going to join us, preview the Bills and the Titans. Tennessee comes in with a good defense and not much going on offense. Will Levis, it's a comment from him, how he's not lost confidence in himself. Good luck on Sunday. What's the line for him to throw one interception? -1,000? This man is going to get intercepted. Don't tell me I'm jinxing the Bills. The Bills' defense is good. Throws confusing looks at quarterbacks. Rodgers is smart. He's good for that. Will Levis is going to get annihilated on Sunday. It's going to be a rough day.
Yeah, he's on pace this year for 25 interceptions.
Let's go.
I mean,
over under 1.5.
Yeah, I might take the over on that. He's at 7 on the year already.
When's Josh going to throw his first?
Maybe never.
What if he went a full year without it? That would win in the MVP. It would also win McDermott Coach of the Year. Seriously, how strong is the Allen interception narrative? Would the NFL world be able to handle itself if he didn't throw any?
Quickly, would his current pace? I think Cooper's here, so Cooper's going to shoot this up. But just, you know, for sake of conversation, he's on pace for 3,200 yards passing, 28 touchdowns, and 0 picks. He wins MVP with that stat line?
Yes.
That's less than 200 passing yards per game.
Yeah, but no interceptions.
Zero picks.
No picks. 28 touchdowns and what, like 12 rushing touchdowns?
Right, the rushing.
If he goes 40 touchdowns total to no picks.
You shouldn't be allowed to win MVP if you're not throwing for 200 yards a game.
Well, Derrick Henry's not throwing for 200 yards a game. He might win MVP. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe, Sal going to join us on the other side here on WGR.